You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like Songa, man, my song's gon' break through like a running back.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. It is Thursday, January 11th, 2024. Belated Happy New Year to everyone. Took a week off last week just to kind of get back into the groove of things after 10 days of doing a little bit of basically nothing. Well, whatever you do at that time of the year, the holiday season, eat too much, sleep too much, do a lot of nothing, but it was a good time and hope that everybody enjoyed a similar wind down to 2023. And then the reboots for 2024 are back into it now. And this is season 9, episode 508 of Scuderia F1. And welcome back to One and All. Before we jump into the show tonight, just first of all, want to remind everyone of the Race Weekend magazine. You can find them at theraceweekend.com, and that is RACEWKND.com. Enter in Scuderia Pod at checkout to receive a 10% discount on a year's subscription. And also check out racingexclusives.com. Tease and the crew have a lot of wonderful, one-of-a-kind, authentic and official Formula One merch with a certificate of authenticity, and you can check them out at racingexclusives.com. So here we go back into it. I guess we're now, what, about 2 months away from the start of the 2024 Formula One World Championship, and slowly but surely, I think I'm starting to get ready to go racing again. And I'm sure just like many of yourselves at home there listening to the pod tonight, we were pretty much done with last season before last season was over. It was not a question of if, but when Max was going to win the championship last season. And it just, once it was all mathematically wrapped up, I think most of us were ready to put, you know, a nice bow around that season, tie it up and put it to the side and move on to the future. But anyways, it is what it is. And hopefully this year will be a lot more competitive. The one thing that I really like about this time of year, and unfortunately we only have a partial list here, and that is the launch dates, the big reveals of the new contenders for the season ahead. So as of today, we only have 4 dates confirmed. Williams is set to launch their 24 Challenger on February 5th in New York City. Sauber, F1, stake, take, kick team, whatever it is. Anyway, no, kidding. Stake F1 team kicks Sauber. Boy, that is going to be such a mouthful to say all season long. Oh boy. They're also going to launch their car on February 5th, but not in the Big Apple. They're going to do that in London. Aston Martin set to launch their car February 12th at Silverstone. And last but not least, Ferrari are going to reveal their car at a launch on February 13th. The time and location still be to confirmed. And then Red Bull, Mercedes, McLaren, Alpine, AlphaTauri, and Haas, none of them have committed to a date or a location for a launch yet. But watch this space. Check it out. And before you know it, that list will fill itself up pretty quickly. So the big news of the week is the one and only, the very colorful and charismatic Gunther Steiner is out at Haas as team principal. And well, I think that was a bit of a shock. Didn't really see that one coming, or maybe we did. But it's, you know, I guess something nobody really expected at this time of year, because it's a bit strange, right? We saw this time last year that Ferrari parted ways with Binotto, and then Williams parted ways with Jos Capito, so maybe not that strange. But just from a logistics and a planning and a preparation point of view for a new team, or not for a new team, but for a new season, a new car and everything that goes with it, You know, we're only 2 months away from the season. I can imagine that there's a lot going on at all 10 teams, at all those factories and all those design shops, getting these cars ready and put together to get to a preseason testing in Bahrain, and then the first round of races for the season. And it's going to be a long season that we're going to have this year. So to pull the plug on a team principal at what seems to be a very crucial time of year in the development curve, with the season just around the corner, is I find it a little bit odd. Anyways, there was a statement that was released by Haas, and they have announced that Ayao Komatsu will be the new team principal. And in the statement, they said, quote, "A brief to maximize the team's potential through employee empowerment and structural process and efficiency." So Gene Haas said that, and he's the owner of the team, of course, was very clear that his focus is on improving the performance of the team, which is kind of funny because he's very quiet, right? I mean, we've heard some things here and there, a few audio clips in Drive to Survive, but you know, he's been a very hands-off owner ever since they joined the grid a number of years ago. Anyways, Haas had to say, quote, "I'd like to start by extending my thanks to Günther Steiner for all his hard work over the past decade, and I wish him well in the future. Moving forward as an organization, it was clear we need to improve our on-track performances, and appointing Ayao Komatsu as team principal, we have fundamentally have engineering at heart of our management. We have had some successes, but we need to be consistent in delivering results that help us reach our wider goals as an organization. We need to be efficient with the resources we have, but improving our design and engineering capability is key to a success as our team. I'm looking forward to working with Ayao and fundamentally ensuring that we maximize our potential. This truly reflects my desire to compete properly in F1, end quote. Anyways, Komatsu joined Haas as chief race engineer back in their debut season, back in 2016. He was Formula One's first Japanese team principal, or is the Formula One's first Japanese team principal of a European team. And Komatsu himself said, quote, "I'm naturally very excited to have the opportunity to be a team principal at MoneyGram Haas F1 team. Having been with the team since its track debut back in 2016, I'm obviously passionately invested in the success in Formula One. I'm looking forward to leading our program and the various competitive operations internally to ensure we can build a structure that produces improved on-track performances. We are a performance-based business. We obviously haven't been competitive enough recently, which has been a source of frustration for us for us all. We have amazing support from Gene and our various partners, and we want to mirror their enthusiasm with an improved on-track product. We have a great team of people across Kannapolis, Banbury, and Maranello, and together I know we can achieve the kind of results we are capable of." End quote. Anyways, very interesting. There's lots of stories, of course, going on or circulating this week about the departure of Günther Steiner. That was just the first, and that was most of those quotes came courtesy of motorsports.com. So Gene Haas, the owner, said he felt embarrassed by the team's poor F1 form, or their form over the last number of years. Anyways, Haas told the official Formula One website, quote, "Ferrari has been very good to us. They have been with us since day one. They build incredible engines. Their suspension is extremely good. We have been using a lot of their hardware. It works really well. They do it. They really do help us. I'm embarrassed we haven't been able to do better with it, but going forward, I want to take advantage of good equipment that a lot of other teams don't have. And things are going to get a lot more competitive. Red Bull have AlphaTauri. We're starting to see these relationships evolve, and I think the competition is going to be very intense. So having a partner like Ferrari is going to be very important. I talked to a lot of the engineers, and I think our biggest failing is aero. Our aero program needs work. When you're at the track and you're humiliated every weekend, I'm going to stop taking that one anymore." And then he went on to talk more about the departure of Günther Steiner, and Haas said the following, to say, quote, "It came down to performance. Here we are in our eighth year, over 160 races. We have never had a podium. The last couple of years, we've been a 10th or 9th. I'm not sitting here saying it's Günther's fault or anything like that, but it just seems that this was an appropriate time to make a change and try a different direction, because it doesn't seem like continuing with what we had is really going to work. I like Günther. He's a really nice person. He has a really good personality. We had a tough end to the year. I don't understand that. I really don't. Those are good questions to ask Günther. What went wrong? At the end of the day, it's about performance. I have no interest in being 10th anymore, end quote. So that's a very interesting, you know, we've had some, you know, pretty good discussions on this podcast over time, just what Haas's intentions are. Is he, you know, well, I'm not even really sure based on that quote there. I mean, he's obviously fed up. He says he wants to do better. He feels that results are better. They haven't reached their potential. And I think that's fair enough. I think that's pretty obvious that they've never really delivered. They've kind of hinted here and there that maybe there was something more under the hood. Maybe there was something that they could still deliver, some better results on the track, some better seasons, better results in the championship. It's never really worked out that way. And it'll be interesting to see going forward because, I mean, he has a very, very valuable commodity on his hands. Should he wish to sell that? I mean, I'm sure Michael Andretti would be willing to part with a bit of money to, or a lot of money actually, to take that team off his hands. Or maybe he's finally woken up and realized, hey, I've got one of 10 Formula One teams, and those are extremely, extremely rare. There is, they are not very easy or common to come by. So maybe I should start doing something with this valuable property and team that I have. So it'll be interesting to see. Anyways, when talking about Komatsu, the new team principal, Gene Haas told F1.com, quote, "We look from within and who had most experience. Yao has been with the team since day one. He knows its ins and outs of it. My biggest concern is when we go to Bahrain, we need to show up with a car that is ready to go. Maybe having more of a managerial type and engineering approach. We'll see if that has benefits. I think Gunther had a more of a human type approach to everything with what people and the way he interacted with people. He was very good at that. Yao is very technical. He looks at things based on statistics. This is what we're doing bad, where we can do better. It's a different approach. We really need something different because we weren't really doing anything that well. Like I said, it all comes down to 8 years in, dead last. Nothing more I can say on that," end quote. But, I think the interesting part of that quote from Gene Haas for me is that second sentence where he says, "My biggest concern is when we go to Bahrain, etc." Says maybe having more of a managerial type and engineering approach, we'll see if that has benefits. So I understand that, he's picked somebody that's been with the team for a very, very long time, understand how it works, understands the people, understands what they're trying to achieve. But the last bit there, which is key for me, is the quote, "We'll see if that has benefits." So it's almost like, I wouldn't say he's throwing something to the wall and hoping that it will stick, but it certainly has a bit of that vibe to it. And I don't know if this is a bit of a rash decision by Gene Haas to let Gunther Steiner go, but that is a bit of an odd question because that leaves the whole situation a little bit hanging for me. That has it really been thought through? Sure, you pick an experienced person in Komatsu, but I don't know. Anyhow, this is kind of an interesting one here. This is a story written by, where was it now? Thomas Mayer over at planetf1.com, entitled "Heartbreaking Details from Schott Gunther Steiner Departure Revealed." And there's some interesting quotes in there. So let's see, where's the first quote here? So the paragraph begins with Steiner and Haas going their separate ways. Details on the nature of the split have started to emerge. According to Sky Sports journalist Craig Slater, the decision to split may have been made during December, and as a consequence, Steiner, living in the United States, he didn't get a chance to say goodbye to the factory, to the team he's worked for almost a decade. Craig Slater had the following to say, quote, "I learned about this at the weekend, but some people I've spoken to say they've known about it for a couple of weeks now. As far as I can glean, a surprise to him that he would not be getting his contract renewed. We can't say that he's been sacked because his contract had come to an end and Gene Haas has decided not to renew that," end quote. So that's very, very interesting. So I guess technically if you don't get your contract renewed, you're not fired, but certainly the message is pretty clear. You're out. You're not coming back. You haven't done what we wanted you to do. So we're going to give the job to somebody else and see if they can do the work instead. Anyways, so this next story here is called "Can F1's Latest Engineer Team Boss Pull Off a McLaren-Style Turnaround for Haas?" And that was written by Jonathan Noble over at motorsport.com. And, there is some precedent here because last year when Andrea Stella took over from Seidel at Andrea Seidel over at McLaren, they really had a fantastic turnaround. Of course, the season started pretty bad for McLaren. It didn't look very, very promising for a good number of races, many, many races, in fact, until we got to Austria at the beginning of July. And then all of a sudden, it's like, holy smokes, where did this McLaren come from? This is what we've been hoping for a while. And they had a couple of little ups. Well, they had some ups and downs along the way, but there were more ups and more than downs. And for me, I think they were one of the bright spots in a season where it was too often predictable. And I guess the big question is now, with Ayao Komatsu taking control of the team principal job at Haas F1, can he do something similar to what Andrea Stella did at McLaren last season? So that's a $64,000 question, right? I mean, can he really get the job done? I mean, we don't really know, like, how much money is he going to work with? I mean, it's always seemed like this is a team that's operated on a shoestring budget. I mean, they've decided a lot of the time to purchase off-the-shelf parts from Ferrari where they can, rather than build everything themselves. They've got a little corner in the factory at Maranello on the Ferrari campus where they've got a shop and operation set up. So the two teams are pretty tightly integrated. I mean, Haas more with Ferrari than the other way around. I mean, I'm sure that's more beneficial to Haas than Ferrari, but who knows? It might be a mutually beneficial situation. But, you know, Komatsu has a very, very big job in front of him. And again, I'm just going to read this one quote from Gene Haas again. Quote, in appointing Ayao Komatsu as team principal, we fundamentally have engineering at the heart of our management. So he's really putting, end quote, he's really putting that banking on somebody that's not just good at managing, but has a good engineering mind, a good understanding how to design and build Formula One cars and maybe deliver them to the promised land. And I think it was interesting because a couple of weeks ago, you know, I read a quote from Günther Steiner on one of the previous episodes of this podcast, and it was something to the effect that Günther was saying that, well, in the model that we have, you know, we're not going to be winning races and championships and things like that, but maybe what we have here is something that we can kind of, like, you know, contend for fifth or fourth or basically for middle of the pack. And I read that and I thought to myself, huh, that doesn't really seem, I wouldn't say defeatist, but it didn't really excite me either, because it's like, what are these guys really trying to achieve? It's just like, we're trying to be the best of the rest of the rest, basically. You know, that's what it comes down to, is like, we know we're not going to win races. We're not going to win championships, but if we can kind of sort of finish in the middle of the pack, then hey, you know, that's good enough for what we can do in with this team, with what we have. And I really felt underwhelmed, and I wouldn't say upset by that, but certainly disappointed, because I don't know. Do you want, like, somebody like Steiner just to be upfront and say the quiet bit out loud rather than, oh, we're here, we're going to do our best to win races and things like that, when we all know that realistically that isn't going to happen? And I think maybe that was a part of, or a lot of, Günther Steiner's charm and why he was so popular with people, is that he had a tendency to call things and say things exactly like they were. There was no kind of beating around the bush. There was no kind of hiding or camouflaging or trying to, like, cover over what was reality. So he just always said what it was. But again, Gene Haas said the following, to say, quote, we need to be efficient with the resources we have, but improving our design and engineering capability is key to our success as a team. I'm really looking forward to working with Ayao and fundamentally ensuring that we maximize our potential. This truly reflects my desire to compete properly in Formula One, end quote. So, Gene, please tell us, what is your desire to compete properly in Formula One? Is it very much like what Günther Steiner said a couple of weeks ago, that, hey, if we finish fourth or fifth in the championship, that's like winning the championship for us. That's good enough. That's all we're aiming for. Or are they aiming for something a little bit more? So that I think time will be will tell. I mean, it's going to be an experiment, obviously, for a long time, because it's going to take Komatsu, I would think, a substantial amount of time to really do anything. Or maybe not. Maybe he knows exactly what needs to be done, and now that he's in charge of the show, maybe he can enact and put things in place that need to be done now. And who knows, maybe we'll see a massive improvement from Haas once we get to winter testing, once we get to the actual season. But you know, I have to admit, I'm a little bit skeptical. Anyways, there's another interesting story here from Planet F1, written by Elizabeth Blackstock, friend of the show. And this one is called Revealed What Haas Employees Really Thought of Gunther Steiner in a Tough Spell. So Elizabeth has a number of really good, mostly anonymous quotes here. The first one is, quote, "He's the best team boss I've ever worked with, and I've worked with a lot." Another one said, quote, "With Gunther, there's no question. You always know what's going on. He's not hiding. He's always telling you the truth. If I was bleeping up, he came up to me, 'What the bleep are you doing? Pull yourself together.'" End quote. That seems very on brand for Gunther Steiner, and very much of what we've seen and heard from him since he became a bit of a, you know, a cult figure, a bit of a, you know, a rock star in the Formula One subculture, and really catapulted to prominence with his appearances in Drive to Survive. Another person, Haas employee, had to say, quote, "I need someone to come here and tell me you made a mistake. But on the other hand, if you did good, Steiner was always there tapping on the shoulder saying, 'Mate, that's it. Good work.'" End quote. So there's some interesting ones there. There's another one here. And this one's interesting because having been in a position in my professional life to have a managerial job and have you know, teams and people working underneath me, this one kind of really stood out. This one anonymous quote was, "Steiner is a great guy. He didn't micromanage, but he oversaw everything. He didn't have to come and talk to all the different employees and the departments, but he did because he wanted to know what was going on. Some stuff he just bat away, just go effing fix it. That's how he was. Other stuff he would say, 'Okay, mate, let's have a chat. What do we need to sort? What do we need to do to sort this out?'" End quote. So, some interesting insight and quotes there from Elizabeth Blackstock. Just quickly before I get into a break here, so Gunther Steiner wasn't the only person to leave the team this week, but their technical Diresta Simone Resta has also left Haas, and it is not known at this point if he will return to Ferrari where he used to work. But he's been at Haas since 2021, and it was part of the arrangement between Ferrari and Haas, who is the customer team, and it was sort of really came about because Ferrari wanted to have strong technical ties between the two teams, and they've really been working close together now since 2016. That's almost a decade. Holy smokes! I keep having to remind myself it's 2024 and 2016. You see, that is 8 years ago already. That's a bit frightening. Okay, well, let's take a real quick break here. We'll come back. Got a couple more stories here just around Haas, and then a couple other interesting stories to talk about involving McLaren and Williams and Mercedes. We'll talk about those, but time now for a quick message from our sponsor. So please don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. And boy, you know, I was sitting down here in the studio tonight to do the podcast, and it was a weird day today. I woke up this morning to go to work, drop the kids off at school, and it was clear as a bell. And I get a message from my son at lunchtime, sitting in my office doing my work, saying, "Hey, I'm at school right now, and it's snowing like a blizzard." And I had to laugh. I'm like, dude, that can't be snowing. You got to be joking. I figured that he was trying to get out of school, trying to get, like, have an excuse to go home early or something like that. Anyways, I went out. I like to go for a walk at lunchtimes whenever the weather cooperates. So I went out for my daily constitutional about, you know, 12:30 or something like that. I'm walking around the neighborhood near where my office is. I'm looking around. I look back towards the parts of, I live in the suburbs of Vancouver, Canada. I look back towards where I live from, you know, near my office, and it is pitch black. Like, it was black, black, black. It was unreal. It looked like it was almost night and over that part of the city, or the suburbs anyways. And it's like, okay, well, maybe there's something going on here. So I go for my walk for about half an hour. I get back to the office. I get a phone call from my wife, and she's just like, yeah, there's, you know, it's supposed to be snowing over the school there, but it's nice and sunny at home. And I'm like, yeah, it's okay over here too. And, having said that, I look over my shoulder. I see a couple of snowflakes coming down. And then within about like 15, 20 minutes, it turned into a full-on blizzard. So I find myself grabbing my stuff, running for my car, knowing that I've got to go and pick all the kids up from school. And boy, did I ever get lucky, because I managed to pick up everybody, get home, and picked up my youngest son from school only about 5 or 10 minutes later than usual, got everybody home. And we live up at the top of a big hill, and I came from the other way. And as I was just turning into our neighborhood, the street into our neighborhood, I see the snowplow struggling to get up the hill and salt and clear the roads in front of my house. So it's pretty messy out there right now. And just looking at the traffic after I got home, it was just gridlock and mayhem everywhere. So certainly glad that I got home when I did, because I'm looking at the temperature now on the taskbar on the monitor here. It says it's -9 degrees Celsius outside, which for Vancouver, being in the Pacific Northwest, is extremely cold, because November kind of went on for about 2.5 months this year. Ever since Halloween, I mean, it's sort of been wet and mild, and, you know, we don't get a lot of like really wintry weather here, but we do get some cold snaps, several times throughout the winter. We usually get maybe one or two big dumps of snow, but winter was very, very late in coming to Vancouver, and it literally showed up in about half an hour. So I thought, I got to get home, you know, I got to get the kids, want to get get everything ready, sit down, do the podcast. So here we are. So the weather report over, and just wanted to talk a little bit more about Haas before I get into some of the other stories here. And there's an interesting article up on Planet F1 by Thomas Mayer again, and it's titled Andretti Buyout, Binotto Arrival, What's Next for Haas After Gunther Steiner Exit. And I was thinking about that too when I heard the news. Like, what is Gene Haas trying to really do? Like, is he, and I was talking about it before the break, is he trying to do something with this team that he's had now for almost a decade, but they've never really lived up to any expectations or potential? You have to wonder, like, with Andretti, I mean, he's kind of been blocked in at every avenue, and they, you know, the existing Formula One teams have really made it difficult for him to get into Formula One. And but it would be kind of strange too, like if, Steiner to not bring back, or sorry, for Haas not to bring back Steiner, because if Andretti was to buy the team, you would think that he would come in, take a look at everybody there, and then decide, you know, right off the bat, either we're going to just let everybody go and bring in our own people, or maybe want to take a look around and see who's, who do we want to keep on board? Who do we want to let go? All those sorts of things. But I think Thomas Mayer asked some very good questions here. Like, what is next for Haas after Gunther Steiner exit? And what is next for Gunther Steiner himself? I think that he's going to be at an auto show sometime this week in the United Kingdom. Said he would speak more at that point. So it'd be very interesting to see what Gunther has to say. Finally, just on this, before I move on to other stories, there was one final article on Planet F1 by Jamie Woodhouse. And Jamie's done a great job really summarizing the current Formula One team principals and how long that they've been on the job. So at the top of the list here, we have Christian Horner over at Red Bull. He's been on the job at Red Bull since January of 2005, almost 20 years. So Horner himself retired from racing at 25. He started into a career of management. He bought a stake in Arden International Team, which had some success in the junior racing scene. But he was always looking for a way to get into Formula One. He got that opportunity with Red Bull by appointing him the team principal at the start of 2005 after they bought out Jaguar. So that's a long time. That's almost two decades. Over at Aston Martin, Mike Crack, he's only been on the job for a couple of years, appointed in January 2022. Frederic Vasseur at Ferrari, it was December 2022, so just a year and a bit. Andrea Stella at McLaren also was appointed to that role in December of 2022. James Vowles, the team principal of Williams, has been on the job since January of 23, so only a year. And then Sauber Alessandro Alunia Bravi, who is, I don't think actually has like a formal like team principal role. I think they came up with something weird after Fred Vasseur left to go over to Ferrari and take the team principal role there. Anyways, Bravi was appointed to that job in January of 2023. Bruno Famin at Alpine has been on the job since July of last year. And Laurent Miquis at AlphaTauri took over in December of 2023. So teams bosses that have been replaced, Gunther Steiner, who was on the job at Haas since April of 2014 until just a couple of days ago. Franz Tost at AlphaTauri, he'd been on the job since 2005 as well, and he just retired at the end of last year. So, you know, so lots of people coming and going, but very interesting to see some of those, some of the names that have been on there for a long time. Where was Toto Wolff? I thought I had Toto on the list there somewhere as well. Yeah, so sorry, Toto's been on the job at Mercedes since January 2013. And then Fred Vasseur, of course, I think, I don't know if I mentioned Fred Vasseur, but December 2022. So he's been there at Ferrari for a little bit as well. Okay, moving on to McLaren. So McLaren, we've talked about them quite a bit. You know, mentioned, dropped that name a couple of times in this episode and talked about them a lot over the past season for both the good, the bad, and a little bit of everything in between. It certainly was a very wild season in 2023 for the Woking team. So their team principal, Andrea Stella, says that they're entirely focused on optimizing their development rather than being, you know, dialing in and really getting hyper-focused on specific results. And he insists, Stella, that is, that if they meet their development targets, that the results will take care of themselves. So, you know, there are no... there's no debate that the start to last year was pretty much a disaster for McLaren, but they certainly turned it around big time. And even though they had a couple of setbacks along the way after the big resurgence at the beginning of July, you know, they did obviously have some hiccups towards you know, in that run down to the end of the season. But by and large, very, very impressive turnaround, and it was exciting to watch the way that they really reestablished themselves as a legitimate, exciting and fun team to watch. And certainly Piastri and Norris are a couple of very good drivers. They had some very, very good drives in that second half of the season. And the couple of races that just didn't work out for them, certainly, you know, I'm sure they'll be able to kind of put those to one side, having, you know, the knowledge and the confidence that what they did certainly did work very, very well for the most part. Anyways, Andrea Stella had a couple of things to say, an exclusive interview with Philip Clearin over at motorsport.com. He said, quote, "I won't talk about how we want to be second, first, third, because that's not even the language we use internally at McLaren. We don't talk about this. Results take care of themselves. What we talk about is this. What do we have to do in terms of aerodynamic development, mechanical development? How do we improve the interaction with the tires? The normal areas, if you ask any other team, they would give you the same answer. Just the projects, that we need to deliver. How do we deliver the projects? How we make sure that they actually deliver what we want? And that's what the focus should be. We are making sure that every day we feel we are making a little step forward. We are increasing competency. We are increasing expertise. We are increasing our knowledge in every parameter that ultimately will deliver performance on track. Then, once we are in Bahrain, once we are in Saudi, we will see how good of a job that we have done. One thing I often tell them, especially my leadership team, plans are really good, but we are not here to execute plans. We are here to deliver performance. Plans are a good reference, but then pretty much every day you need to adapt and say, what does this mean for my next step and how do I have to revisit my plan? Plans could easily lead to a comfort zone. I tried to take it from the point of view with that focus on performance. A plan is a tool. It is not the aim, end quote. Very interesting bit of insight there from Andrea Stella and his mindset into developing that car and their program and what they need to do. Very, very interesting that he focuses more on performance because, I mean, if you compare that to some of the quotes and some of the different things that Gene Haas had to say that I read off at the beginning of the podcast, is that they seem to have not been quite focused on performance as much as they should have done. So interesting sort of differing mindsets between Haas and McLaren. So going back to 2022 in the French Grand Prix, is according to McLaren CEO Zak Brown, it was a catalyst for their shock turnaround in Formula One. So obviously we were talking just now and earlier the show, just like how big of a turnaround that they had last year mid-season. But Zak Brown wants to dial that back even further. When he was speaking with motorsport.com, he said that he goes all the way back to the French Grand Prix in 2022. They were late with upgrades. They were ineffective. And the reaction that the leadership team was not the reaction that Zak Brown wanted to see. And that was also the same time that they were going to be starting to develop their car for the next season. So he says that was a very, very big moment at in that season for himself personally. And they made the changes at the end of the year with Andrea Stella coming in as a team principal. He said, quote, let's change this, change some people, hire some people, end quote. And he believes that's when things started to change. Anyways, well, they did get gains. Lando Norris said at the time that the changes, the improvements were not something that he said he would dream of, but he didn't really think that anyone really expected a lot of the improvements back at that French Grand Prix in 2022. Zak Brown said that when they were heading into last year, they did have a degree of optimism and they were positive. Even if they felt that the car that they had at the start of the season wasn't quite where they wanted to be or wasn't as good as they wanted to be. Anyways, the quote here that finishes the article from Zak Brown is, quote, we were confident, but until you put it on the car and it works, you never know. I think what is good is we knew that we weren't going to be strong immediately. So I think we would have been a worse situation if we thought we were going to be strong and we weren't, and we'd be scratching our heads. So what that told me was that we knew where we were. We weren't just to where we wanted to be, as opposed to putting stuff on the car and saying, this is going to be good. And then it's not. So at least our data has been accurate, end quotes. Oscar Piastri, the real standout, former McLaren rookie driver. Well, not former McLaren. He's formerly a rookie going into his second year in Formula One, says that there's no barriers in the relationship he has with teammate Lando Norris. And he believes that the relationship between the two of them is essential for McLaren's progress and improvements, continued improvement in Formula One. And he says that it's very important to have a completely open relationship and having no barriers with his teammate Lando Norris if the team is going to be continually developing. And he was speaking to Matt Q over motorsport.com. And he said, quote, the relationship is still exactly the same. Of course, we're not winning titles at the moment. We're a lot closer than we were, but we still need to find a bit more to challenge and beat Red Bull. So it's still very important for us to work together and help the team develop the car. The team back at MTC and the engineers here are doing their best to try and help things. But if me and Lando have got any additional info or directions on things, then anything we can do to help is going to help the both of us. In terms of data and stuff like that, it's all completely open. There are no barriers or anything, and that won't change. We just need to make sure that our racing is respectful. But apart from that, it's all good, end quote. So very, very important that the two of those drivers get on well. And boy, what a good pairing that is of Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. I think obviously we had a lot of questions about Oscar Piastri coming into last season. It was very bizarre how that whole situation where he was supposed to be going to Alpine and then he wasn't and basically said so on social media ends up taking Ricciardo's spot at McLaren. And of course, there's always going to be questions around a rookie driver. There's always questions about rookies in any sport. But I think in Formula One, those questions are just bigger and they're more magnified, or maybe not bigger, more magnified, but certainly more focused, because compared to, say, a football team, a rookie in the NFL or the NBA or whatever it might be, there's only 20 Formula One drivers. So if you have a rookie that struggles, and take a look at Nyck de Vries last year, even though he was like 27, 28 or whatever it was, still rookie season in Formula One, struggled mightily and then was replaced halfway through the season by Danny Ricciardo. And, you know, kind of compare that to the season that Oscar Piastri had. Of course, perhaps, you know, we didn't get a good look at his true potential because the McLaren struggled at the start of the season. But once he kind of found a footing and the car was much improved, boy, what a good package that was. And what a good pairing that is with Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri. Hopefully Lando has the same feeling that, you know, towards Oscar Piastri that Pat Piastri has to them, because it is essential that the pair of them do work together, because ultimately, you know, it is going to benefit the team, and what benefits the team will help develop and help the car get better. And that can only be good for the both of them. All right, time to take another quick break. Please hang around. We've got a couple more stories for you tonight. And we'll do so in just a moment after we step aside for a brief message from our sponsors. Don't go away. All right, welcome back to the show. And the next story here, we're going to go from four wheels to two wheels. And those two wheels don't even have a mechanically powered engine in them. We're going to talk now about cycling. And there is a tie into Formula One here, just because it's a bit interesting. And this is from globalcyclingnetwork.com. It's about a week old, but I thought it was worth mentioning. And this is a story that Red Bull has acquired a controlling stake in Bora Hansgrohe, which is an elite cycling team. And so there's no need to really get too deep into what's going on in elite cycling, but you know, at these elite levels, Bora Hansgrohe is a team that goes to all the grand tours, like the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, etc. Hasn't been like a big contender. They've had some good cyclists, good riders over the year, but Red Bull has acquired 51% of the ownership in the parent company, and this is Bora Hansgrohe is a German team, and the big. The big news is that that Primoz Roglic is supposed to be going there. So what's interesting is Red Bull, which is based in Austria, will indirectly acquire 51% in RD Pro Cycling and a bunch of other things, which owns the Bora Hansgrohe World Tour team. And I thought it was interesting because, it's not Red Bull Racing, but I thought as a brand, it's just very interesting just to, like, how much money that Red Bull has and that they're able to throw it around. I mean, they're involved with two Formula One teams, a number of professional soccer teams, you know, elite cycling team. I mean, things are good for Red Bull. So anyways, the team manager, Ralf Denk, previously had the majority stake in the company. There was a couple of statements released saying, quote, Red Bull is planning to expand its involvement in road cycling and aiming for partnership with Bora Hansgrohe by becoming a partner in team manager Ralf Denk's operating company. Red Bull strives to complement the team's portfolio of existing long-term main sponsors who will remain on a long-term basis. The planned joint venture has been notified to the relevant antitrust authority. And goes on to say, we ask for your understanding that we will not comment further on the planned joint venture, as we do not wish to anticipate the ongoing review by the Austrian antitrust authority. And then it keeps on going, blah, blah, blah. So anyways, it's very interesting that they were, you know, the thing is that Red Bull apparently is, you know, was reported to be involved in Bora Hansgrohe's sign of Primoz Roglic in the off season. And apparently Roglic was spotted at the Red Bull Athlete Performance Center just outside of Salzburg while the talks were ongoing between the two parties. So just interesting. I thought it was worth mentioning that Red Bull, just as an entity, just across the board, is throwing a lot of money around in a lot of different places. Anyways, back to Formula One. This is another one. So this is an interesting story about Williams, and the title is Why Behind the Curve Williams is Only a Positive for Vowles. And that is James Vowles. The team principal is Williams. And he's been pretty open and forthcoming about, you know, since he's been with the team for, you know, since joining there last year, beginning of last year, how far behind it was in some of the infrastructure compared to a lot of the other Formula One teams. I thought it was interesting last year hearing some of the things of, you know, some of the quotes by James Vowles saying that things that he was used to getting into at, you know, at Mercedes that would take a month or two or something, that if he wanted that done at Williams, he said, well, that'll take a year or two or something similar. You know, he said in an interview with motorsport.com that he actually likes the what he calls the infrastructure situation. And he said, quote, the team has done incredibly well before I joined and even when I've been here, because it's driven by passion. It's a true racing team. Anytime I keep looking at our facility structures, infrastructure, methods, and I realize how far behind we are, I'm only encouraged by it. We're here today. We're here where we are today. And I can't wait until we get a lot of it fixed, because we'll be in a much better place and in a short space of time too, because there's still quite a bit still of low-hanging fruits left over that we can pick up, end quote. So, you know, it's very interesting, right? Because, you know, this is a team that until fairly recently was decently competitive. And I mean, well, maybe not fairly recently, but I mean, if you go back to the mid-teens, 2016, 2017, especially when Felipe Massa was still around, this was a team that was kind of in the best of the rest conversation. Okay, it wasn't a Ferrari, wasn't a Mercedes, but, you know, they were good for a podium here and there. And then they very quickly fell into the abyss. And in terms of performance, you know, they didn't really have all the greatest drivers there, and some of the drivers that they've had have gone on to other teams and done some bigger and better things. Look at George Russell and Lance Stroll, gone on to Mercedes and to Aston Martin, etc. So interesting to see. But I mean, this is a team that I struggle with, because when I was a kid, when I was getting into Formula One, they were at the top and they had some great drivers. They had some great cars. I mean, you look at the cars, the Williams cars that they built in the late 80s and the early 90s and even into the 2000s. I mean, just gorgeous cars. I mean, I've got a couple of 118 scale models here just surrounding me on the shelf just beside where I'm recording this podcast right now. Just gorgeous cars. I mean, you look at the one sort of like in the mid 90s when Damon Hill won his world championship powered by the Renault. I mean, just absolutely fantastic stuff. And to see them just drop off like they have, I mean, they haven't won a race now since, what was it, 2012, when Pastor Maldonado won at the Spanish Grand Prix. And that was a bit of an unexpected, well, let's just be honest, it was a bit of a fluke. And that was their first win in a number of years. But, you know, they were up there for a long, long time. And to see them, especially in recent years, struggling like they were, it was, you know, for me personally, very disappointing. And there was some hope, but also some nervousness, you know, from or discomfort on my behalf. I mean, I don't have any financial stake in the team, but I don't want to see the brand disappear. And I mean, this was a team that was run by Frank Williams and his family for what, 40 years or something like it was, until he stepped aside, and then Claire Williams took over, and then eventually the family sold the team to Derelton Capital. And I must admit that when I heard that you know, a venture capitalist firm like Derelton Capital came in, I figured this is just going to be a placeholder thing. They're going to, you know, just use it as an investment, sell it on, and you know just try and make money off of the, you know, just treat it as a property, as an investment, and make some money off of it, and then sell it on to the next person. But they've been there for a couple of years now, and slowly but surely things are getting better. I mean, it's got more of a, I have to admit, a bit more of a corporate feel to it. I mean, when the Williams family was involved, it still felt like there was a bit more of a family feel, a bit of a racy kind of old school, like, you know, like just build a car, get out there and race, even though that's, you know, not easily done in Formula One this day and age, but it certainly felt like that. And it was, for me, I mean, just very worrisome that this might be a team that would disappear forever. But even so now, I think they're obviously like a little bit more stable, the ownership that they have. And I think that they've got a very, very good driver in Alex Albon. I think that was a really brave move that they did, that they pried him away from Red Bull and they kind of went their own way and didn't really let Mercedes, who was their engine partner and try to influence to put another driver into the car that was a little bit more to their liking. They went out and got a driver that they wanted. And we've seen last season, especially that Albon had some bright moments. I don't have his stats particularly at hand, but he had some very, very good races and did some things with that car in races and in qualifying that were encouraging to see. I mean, Logan Sargeant, the American rookie, had a very difficult year and at times, had more of a rookie season in Formula One than, say, Oscar Piastri had as a rookie season in Formula One. I mean, they were two contrasting tales. I mean, Piastri got a lot of headlines for a lot of the things that he did last year. Maybe that goes to prove of just like, you know, how talented, how good that he is. And Logan Sargeant, maybe the jury is still out on him as a driver. I mean, is there something still there? Is it as good as it's going to get and things like that? But certainly, I mean, at least with Alex Albon, delivered some very, promising moments in that Williams last year. Anyways, they also had other news at Williams this week, pardon me, and that they've extended their engine deal with Mercedes until 2026, and they will stay on with them beyond 26 until 2030, so that's very long. So James Vowles said in an announcement, it is fantastic to extend our partnership with Williams Racing until 2030. We have enjoyed a strong relationship with them since the introduction of the current power unit regulations and look forward to continuing that effort into the next era. Their commitment and support to our future power unit strategy is highly valued. We look forward to approaching the new rule set together with the same passion and enthusiasm we did in 2014 and with the aim of achieving similar successes. Toto Wolff, who's the team principal at Mercedes, said, quote, Williams is a historic F1 team, and over the course of our partnership, we have enjoyed notable successes together since our first partnering back in 2014. One of our proudest moments at the HPP in the current turbo hybrid era was seeing our power unit lock out the top four positions of the 2014 Austrian Grand Prix, with Williams taking well-deserved third and fourth. Our working relationship with Williams has only strengthened over the past decade, and we look forward to continuing that productive approach as we head into the next generation of power units in 2026, end quote. All right, well, let's talk about something else now. Let's talk about Lewis Hamilton. So, Formula One analyst Peter Windsor was on a YouTube live stream recently, and we're just talking about Lewis Hamilton, talking about Max Verstappen. Lewis, of course, seven-time world champion, had the opportunity to win an record eighth world championship, taken away from him, wrested out of his hands when he could literally feel the trophy at Abu Dhabi a couple of years ago. No need to get into that craziness again. So at least the way that things stand now is that Lewis, seven world championships, and Max has three. And Peter Windsor believes that Max Verstappen could, in his words, absolutely become a seven-time world champion and perhaps could, better Lewis Hamilton. When he was asked on the live stream, he had the following to say, quote, for sure he could, absolutely. I was talking about this with a friend, actually, about how good Max is now. I made the point that one of the reasons he is so good now, so intense, and this is one of the reasons he's good, because he's always been a very good team with a very good car and knows those people very well, particularly Red Bull's design chief Adrian Newey and team principal Christian Horner. It's a very good team as well. It's one thing to know your team if they're in the midfield. It's another thing if they're the best team in Formula One, and he fits there like a glove on a hand. And that's perfectly, absolutely a perfect situation for a driver with that amount of talent. And that has happened. And as a result of that, the talent has taken an additional leap forward, I think, to a realm that perhaps we've never seen before in the history of Formula One. I don't like comparing eras, but I can think of another driver who's been so in sync with the car that he drives, which happens to be, for the most part, a race-winning car. I know there was a period when the Mercedes engine had the advantage and he didn't have the power to compete, but even then, it was a very good team getting the best from the car with a power down-on-power engine. And it was a team that a young kid would want to be with at that point. Now the car is brilliant, and it's just bringing more and more out of Max Verstappen. Has Lewis got the chance of winning another world championship? I really hope that he has, because I still feel terrible about what happened in Abu Dhabi, but I'm not sure that he will get the opportunity as long as Max is there at Red Bull, to be honest, end quote. So what do you think about Peter Windsor's comments? Do you think that as long as Max is at Red Bull, he's just going to keep winning the championships until he equals Lewis? That's just four championships more, four more seasons. It's possible. Did he beat him at the end? Well, Max still in the prime of his career, still fairly young. Lewis towards the tail end of his career. And, you know, it looks like at this point, perhaps maybe there is something to what Peter Windsor is saying about Max Verstappen and where he could end up and the list of world champions in the future. Anyways, quickly now about Alpine. So they're really hoping that to revive their fortunes in Formula One. They've spent some more money on factory tools, upgrading those. And, they finished sixth in the Constructors' Championship last year. They had an up-and-down season. They had two podiums, and they were pretty brutal at some tracks and better at others. But their technical director, Matt Harmon, believes that the new upgraded factory tools will give the team an injection of energy, a big boost, even before we get to the new regulations that are only 2 years away now in 2026. Anyways, Harmon had to say, quote, "Our focus is very much on the future and the 2026 regulations, as well as the cars that we need to do between now and then. We've also got a big program at both sites, Enbon and Viri, to improve the capabilities and the functions. You've seen this in the CapEx equalization topics that have gone on with the FIA. We fully funded those to achieve those, or we're going to put all those pieces of equipment in. They'll be alive and working to feed into the 2026 regulations. There will also be feeding into cars before that. We've been getting focusing our simulation tools, which need to be sharp, better getting good answers to difficult questions more quickly. And I've experienced that in teams that I've worked at in the past. And that's one of our capability improvements. So we're doing all of those things. And the plan that we've had for the last 3 years, from my perspective, is unchanged. We're just accelerating it. We're well funded. We've got enough people. It's just about getting on with it, getting our heads down," end quote. So we'll see. I don't know if, Alpine has what it takes. That's been another frustrating team to watch. I mean, they've been on the grid now since, what, 2015, 2016 as well, since they took over Lotus, rebranded. First they were Renault, and then rebranded again to Alpine a couple of years ago. And they've only really delivered a couple of podiums here and there during their latest incarnation in Formula One. And again, just a frustrating, underperforming team that just hasn't delivered the goods to date. Couple quick ones here. So there's some construction work that is taking place at Monza, which they're hoping will help keep a Formula One race there in the future. They're trying to improve the track and the infrastructure and things like that. So when they were talking about Monza last year, Formula One CEO Stefano Domenicali said improving Monza's facilities was absolutely crucial if they wanted to have any hopes of getting a contract extension. Domenicali said at the time, quote, "The historical value of Monza is beyond question, but we also need to keep up with the times in terms of services, which must be in line with the prices being paid with those who come to the racetrack. Within the next year, we will have a clear idea about the future," end quote. So they had a groundbreaking ceremony to kick off the redevelopment, all the construction work, and it's a fairly intense 140 days that they're going to have to what they call a redevelopment push. People that were there include Italian Federation President Angelo Sticchi Domani and Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini. And the event also confirms some of the key areas that they're going to work on during this redevelopment. It's going to be a complete track resurfacing, construction of new underpass, plus the expansion of Creed 3 current ones around the circuit, improved pit building facilities, and a bunch of improvements to the grandstands. I sound like Gollum from Lord of the Rings, but it's getting late now, and I've been rambling for almost an hour, so you'll forgive me if I stumble here and there. Sticky Damani said, quote, "Our main goal is to bring the Autodromo back up to speed. We can no longer afford to have problems with the flow of fans, and we must offer greater comfort to those who come to the circuit. We have set ourselves with three goals to be best meet the requests made to us, and these and of these, the first is the underpasses. The second goal is related to the grandstands. We will still have several temporary structures, so we'll build more solid structures that will provide all the amenities in line with what spectators expect today. Each grandstand will be an island with all the necessary services inside, so the public will not have to move around. And finally, a permanent type of roofing will be built over the pit building. Support pillars will be reinforced because the structure will grow in height," end quote. So, Stefano Domenicali said that this is an important goal to get Monza all upgraded and modernized. He said, quote, "We need to be able to receive our guests in a proper structure and no longer under a tent as it was last year. In addition to this, there are obviously other interventions needed for the future. Monza has a great tradition, but we also must look ahead and purpose the racetrack at the level of the other world championship tracks," end quote. So there you go. A couple of things now, just really quickly before we wrap it up. So another key person has left the FIA, and that is technical director Tim Goss. And that is, you know, the latest person, latest name after, you know, a number of people have left most recently. Well, before this resignation of Tim Goss was sporting director Steve Nielsen, who resigned last month. And both of them were very key figures within the FIA. So he was, in the article I'm reading here from Motorsport says that Goss's, departure from the FIA is a really big blow because he's a real important figure within the development of the 2026 regulations. He reports to single-seater director Nicolas Tombazes, who noted, quote, "We are disappointed to lose a person of Tim's caliber from the organization. Tim has played a major part in the technical department and has always operated to the highest level. We understand that his career is taking a new direction going forward, and we support and respect your desire to pursue another path and wish him luck for his future endeavors," end quote. So there you go. Another person is leaving. Nielsen, who left last month, will be replaced by Tim Malion, who previously served as the safety director at the FIA. And the FIA said in a statement that Malion will oversee all sporting matters, including race direction and the remote operations center in Geneva. And Niels Wittich will remain in his role as a race director. And so there we go. And then finally, let's just say FIA President Mohammed bin Sulayem is a bit of a polarizing figure. It seems that, a lot of people seem to have it in for him, or at least does. He's a bit of a controversial person at any rate. He said that he knows who is attacking him in an information leak. And 2023 was a pretty rough year for bin Sulayem. He openly criticized what he called the inflated value of Formula One. And he got a letter from the Formula One management and ended up by getting Mercedes and Toto and Susie Wolf upset, following what was an investigation into what was a leaked situation. He said that, Ben Sulayem says he's the innocent party, and he said that there's people out there that are going, they're trying to get him. He told Motorsport magazine, quote, "They are media representatives. They know how they work. People don't want to wake up and read. The sky is blue. The grass is green. The birds are singing. At the end of the day, I know who's attacking me, and they think I don't know. Do you really think I would be in this position if I had stupid people around me? Of course, my team is very smart. The paddock is a very small circle, and everyone knows everyone. You know who leaked something or invented something about me. I know it. And what do? I smile about it. I know who's behind it, and then I smile at them. Is it counterproductive? No. Is it good for business? No. People who talk about it don't even know what they're talking about. Do they really believe that the big manufacturers would make their own mastery that does not have a regulator? Do they really think they would invest? Because do you want another WWE? You already know beforehand who wins, that someone invests, and suddenly the rules are changed. No, it's about having clear rules beforehand. Then you can invest. This is a show, not here. End quote. So anyways, he kind of going around a lot of different ways, you know, talking about the rumors that, you know, like not just concerning himself, but also that Formula One was also considering about splitting and going away from FIA. Anyways, there you go. So an hour into it, let's call it a day for now. Thank you one and all for listening to the show. Thank you for getting in touch. Looking forward to getting things back on track here, getting back into our groove. Looking forward to the new season coming up in just a couple of months, and that will start to ramp up pretty quickly. If you want to get in touch, give us a follow on X at Scuderia F1 Pod. Send us a message. And thanks very much for listening. Be back again this time next week. Until then, have a great weekend. Have a great start to next week. And we'll talk to you then. Bye for now.